Hello and welcome to Juno Afternoon. It's Monday, April 21st. It's 2:59 p.m. in the afternoon, and we've got a great show. We'll be talking with Kim Kiefer from CBJ. She's the CBJ manager. We've got Dr. Hope, an Anchorage-based oncologist doctor here, talking about a film. She's also a rock star. We'll learn about the upcoming Audubon cruises. We'll also hear from Corey Stinnett about upcoming parent-child workshops to promote healthy sexual development in families, and we'll talk about summer wellness with Christine Morbury. All that, Writer's Almanac, Bird's Note, and more. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
For National Native News, I'm Tristan Ottone, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. The Canadian government has tabled Bill C-33, called the First Nations Education Bill. It would allow Native people to provide language and cultural programming in ways they see fit. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, while some Native leaders are critical, the head of the Assembly of First Nations is somewhat more optimistic.
Sean Atleo has been fighting for a couple of years for more First Nations control of education, some Native leaders even longer, since the first generation of children who were forced into the hated residential school system. In December, chiefs passed a resolution to lobby for First Nations education based on several key conditions. They include respect for First Nations jurisdiction, rights, and treaties, a guarantee of stable, adequate funding, support for Aboriginal languages and cultures, the removal of federal control, and an ongoing, meaningful dialogue. Sean Atleo, the national chief of the Assembly of First Nations, says memories of the residential school era are still strong.
We want to know that the experience and the trauma will never again be repeated, that our people and future generations will be nurtured in their languages and cultures through local First Nations control of education. This is our objective. We have been and will remain unrelenting in pursuing this achievement.
Atleo says it's time for all First Nations to review the bill. Each nation needs to determine if the bill meets their needs. Atleo does say there is some positive movement in the legislation. It has significant new funding attached to it that is now locked into the federal budget. Atleo also cautions that the bill is not a substitute for treaty implementation or self-government, but must be a bridge for First Nations to set up their own education system. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Long-awaited money from an oil and gas settlement on the Wind River Indian Reservation is finally on its way. Wyoming Public Radio's Irina Zhuroff has more.
The federal government is paying the tribes $157 million for underpayment of royalties on oil and gas developments and the improper management of royalties that were paid. Northern Arapaho spokesman Mark Howell says some people don't have bank accounts, and there were concerns they would not be able to cash their checks.
The banks would not have the supply of cash on hand necessary to cash the check. The business council worked with the various banks in the area to ensure that they had sufficient cash on hand.
The settlement is split evenly between the tribes, but individual Eastern Shoshone tribal members will receive more money than Northern Arapaho members because there are less of them. Howell says the influx of money will be good for everyone.
We expect those dollars will turn over several times, and there will be, as economists like to say, a multiplier effect. And it should boost both the tribal economy as well as the broader Fremont County economy.
Some of the money will also go to tribal government, and $10 million will be set aside to address environmental degradation caused by oil and gas development. For National Native News, I'm Irina Zhuroff.
According to a new poll, Americans are split on whether tribes should be able to expand sovereignty. The survey, run by Farleigh Dickinson University, asked whether tribes should be able to buy new land and open casinos on that land while retaining the same rights already held on established territory. 48% of those polled said tribes should be able to buy land and build casinos. 42% said tribes shouldn't buy new land and expect the same privileges. The poll focused on three big cases being considered by the Supreme Court this year, including Michigan versus Bay Mills Indian Community. A decision in that case is expected soon and will likely have major impacts on the Indian casino industry. On this day in 1869, Seneca member Donahogawa, or Eli Samuel Parker, became the first Native American to be appointed as Commissioner of Indian Affairs. Parker also drew up the Appomattox Surrender Papers that General Robert E. Lee signed to end the Civil War in 1865. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Ottone.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello, welcome back to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. I'm Joan Pardes, your Monday host. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. And as for the weather, rest of today is partly cloudy, highs around 56. Tonight, partly cloudy. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, highs around 52. Northeast wind 10 miles per hour, shifting to the northwest in the afternoon. Mostly cloudy Tuesday night, partly cloudy for the rest of the week. And I don't see that rain anywhere in this forecast, but we'll have an update at the end of the hour. So speaking of updates, Kim Kiefer comes into the show every now and then, almost on a monthly basis, I would say. Kim
yes.
Kiefer is the city manager. And I would say it's always hot in the office, but I think it's a little bit hotter these days because there's a $12 million shortfall. And, like, we might be laughing, but, Kim, how did this happen?
Well, actually, it's a $15 million, not to make things worse.
Thank you for giving a correct number.
So it's $6 million this year and $9 million, $9.25 next year. And so we knew that we were going to draw out a fund balance by $3 million for the next 2 years. So that's why people are thinking $12 million difference.
Okay.
But how we got here are a couple things. One is we make projections every year when we do the budget. We project what we'll bring in for sales tax, and we project what we'll bring in for property tax. The past couple of years, we've had increases of 2 to 3% in our sales tax and property tax. This year, we have an increase, but it's not as much. So we started to see this last fall that the numbers weren't as high as what we had thought. And so we are anticipating at this point that we'll probably come out of the current fiscal year about $1 million behind what we had projected. So our projections for 15 and 16 were based on an increase off of the old number, which then puts us even farther behind
from where we want to be. So that's a million?
That was a million that we're rolling out of this year not having that goes into 15. So we already are starting in the hole.
Okay.
Going
so
into
that's 15. One out of 12
out of,
or 15,
yeah, out of 15
because you're using the $3 million from the general fund.
Right.
But what about the rest?
So that was just assuming.
And that's a whole other conversation of what can we
Buy local.
Well, there you
That's
go.
That's what we can do for our sales tax.
Okay, well, that was succinct. Okay, so let's move along onto the another 11, 14, however we're
right.
looking at this.
So since our numbers are down for 14, what we're going to bring in for 15 and 16, we're being much more conservative. So we're not going to estimate a 2 to 3% increase like we have in the past. So we'll be bringing in, we're estimating we'll bring in less revenue. So then that, once again, impacts what our expenses are. And then in past years, we have also carried over what we call fund balance. So it's a $2 to $3 million that we put into the base budget. And so last year that was $3 million. When we were looking at doing budget projections earlier, we didn't account for that $3 million for both years. So that's $6 million. That's half of it right there. That's not a reoccurring amount that we can count on. So that fund balance is made up of excess sales tax or property tax above what we had projected, as well as carryover from current year's budgets. So when we budget, we tell people save money and that money can go into next year's budget. We don't have a budget system where if you don't spend it this year, you don't get it next year. We say budget what you need to, and then if you can save money along the year, save that money, and that just carries over to help us in future years.
Right.
So it's a combination of costs going up, revenues going down or flat, and it's really important for people to know we aren't in crisis in the community. Sales tax is going up. It's just not going up the way we thought it was going to. We thought it was going to be more in the 2 to 3%. What we're recommending or what we're projecting for 15 and 16 is more like a half a percent and 1%. So we have less revenue coming in, which makes that shortfall between our expenditures and our revenues even larger.
Okay. So quick question on that, and then I want to talk about more like action. But so it was 2 to 3% for the past couple of years, or however long it is, I don't know.
Past two.
Right. Mm-hmm. So was that a new trend? Was before that, was it a half percent or 1%? Like, what was the magic formula to make that increase?
The increase. Well, if you think back in 2009 and 10 is when we started the recession overall, and so those numbers were going down. We came back. Strong over the last couple of years, and we just assumed that that strength would continue. And really what that strength has done is just plateaued. So it's still growing a little bit, but just not as much.
Right.
And it's, like I said, we're not decreasing, we're just not growing as much as we had anticipated.
Mm-hmm. Right. But with that said, there's a lot of new businesses in town, there's a lot of new restaurants in town, we're going into a strong tourist season. They're expecting the same amount, if not a little bit more this year?
Actually, a little bit, not much.
Mm-hmm.
So we've looked at the top 10 or top 20 businesses from a sales tax standpoint and done comparisons to last year, and they're pretty close. So we're digging deeper into that to figure out where is that loss? Where is it coming from?
Right.
But as I said, it's really really, really important to buy local. It does not only helps those businesses and that money turns over in the community, but it also helps the sales tax. So then we can turn around and fund those facilities, those programs,
the infrastructure
that people want and expect.
Right. Okay, so there is this shortfall, significant.
Yes.
I think 8 full-time jobs are going to have to end.
Potentially.
Right, and then there's talk about the downtown pool closing and lots of other things. So as Jane and John Doe citizen, what can we do to let our lawmakers know what's really important to us? What can we do as citizens to protect what's important to us?
So let your voice be heard. And so Juno.org, you can go on and tell it to City Hall. You can pick the Borough Assembly. You can pick me and let us know what your thoughts are. I'm also asking for recommendations. What are other things that people are thinking we should do that could potentially help us save money? So one of the suggestions somebody said is we need to build a city hall so that we can consolidate all city offices in one place and not lease as much. And then we probably would be able to save money because we'd be able to control the temperature and lights, et cetera. So there's all sorts of ideas and things that we're looking at. The Assembly last week went through the reduction list, and I had proposed $1.5 million in reductions to make up the $6 million for this upcoming year. They accepted all but 4 of them. So they put 4 things on their pending list, which means they want to look at it some more. That's Capital Transit. It's the Augustus Brown Swimming Pool. It's Assembly Grants, and that the Assembly does a lot of grants to different organizations in the community, and then the school district. The school district, because we don't know what's happening still on school district funding, so we want to wait till that piece is done. So we'll be looking at that again in the future after we find out what finally ends up happening up on the Hill. And then this Wednesday, another piece to balance the budget that I recommended was to increase the mill rate. And so the Assembly Finance Committee will talk about that increased mill rate at Wednesday night's meeting. And what my recommendation was is to increase it 0.34 area-wide and then a 0.10 in the fire service area. And the fire service area increases to help with the maintenance of the fire hydrants and the water, and that's why it's the fire service area. So it would be a total increase of 0.44, which ends up being approximately $150 for a $300,000 house.
Right. And if you're listening and you don't think that's a good idea, you heard Kim, tell it to City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Get online, phone your assembly members, let them know how you think. This is obviously, we need all the great brains together figuring out a solution. So let's focus on solutions and figure out how we could keep, you know, stable and growing.
Yes.
So with that, we're going to have to take a short break. We're going to listen to David Bromberg. He's coming, speaking of, you know, thriving. Mm-hmm. Juno Jazz and Classics is around the corner, Friday, May 2nd, A&B Hall, 7 p.m., David Bromberg. We're going to listen to him. Kim, thanks for coming in, and thanks for all you do.
Thank you.
Cause on May 10th. Join March of Dimes on Saturday, May 10th at Diamond Fieldhouse for this year's Juno Walk for Babies. Registration opens at 9 a.m. with the walk beginning at 10 a.m. Money you raise will help moms have healthy babies and support families of premature babies, just as the March of Dimes has done for 75 years. So who will you walk for? Walk for Babies, Saturday, May 10th. More information at marchforbabies.org.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's 3:17 p.m. on April 21. I'm Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. Next, our guests are Nicole Hollingstadt. She is from Juno. She is the executive director of Career Connect. Cancer Connections. Sorry about
that. Right. Hi,
Jen. And Dr. Hope, who's an Anchorage-based oncologist. And Dr. Hope is not only an oncologist, she's also in a band. She's in a rock band. So can we talk a little bit about that? Because, like, I have a profession, but I couldn't possibly, like, do chew gum the way I do my profession, and you're in a rock band and a surgeon?
Yes, actually. So I'm a gynecologic oncologist, and I specialize in the care of women with reproductive cancers, and I'm also in a rock and roll band called No Evidence of Disease, and all six of us are gynecologic oncologists, spanned the entire width of the country, raising awareness through rock and roll.
That sounds great. So you are the only gynecological oncologist in Alaska. You're based in Anchorage. Is that correct?
I have been the only gynecologic oncologist until October, but thankfully I recently brought up a partner, and so now there are two of us.
Oh, that's good. That's good. So how did you and your other colleagues from around the nation decide to form a rock band, and what do you play? What's your role in it? Do you write your own music?
It's all original music.
Wow.
I am one of the lead singers in the band. The way that we came about actually spans back to 2008 at our annual Society for Gynecologic Oncology Cancer Conference, which at that time took place in Tampa, Florida. And we basically did a one-time cover show that was just supposed to be a fun event for the participants, about 2,000 people at the conference. But as it turned out, these were phenomenal musicians who basically were, you know, when they were younger, dreamed of maybe being professional musicians someday, and ultimately more practical dreams supplanted those, and they became doctors. And then we found each other and realized, hey, you know, these are great musicians. Music is a phenomenal medium to inspire people and raise hope. So the two of us who at that time were in New York City approached a small record label and said, listen, this is a great idea. There's six gynecologic oncologists. We could write original music and get the message out in a creative way. And that's how we produced our first album. And from there, we've now produced a second album a few years ago, and we're on our third.
Wow. So this is just, it takes like, hey, gee, let's start a band to a whole different level. This is just wonderful. So let's talk about, there's a film tonight, okay? There's a film tonight at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. It's 6:30. It's free. Nicole, can you tell us about the film? Because Dr. Hope is here for this event.
It's so exciting that we have one of the musicians from the movie who's in town to talk with the crowd a little bit before the movie, but then for a question and answer period after the movie to talk about below the belt cancers. So Cancer Connection, in partnership with others in the community, is sponsoring this free showing at 6:30 tonight at Goldtown Nickelodeon of the movie NED, No Evidence of Disease.
That sounds great. So Dr. Hope, you want to say something?
I was just going to say that the movie came about 2 years into the after the formation of the band, where an independent documentary film crew company, Spark Media, picked up the idea that this would be a really interesting way to tell the story about women's cancers, women's gynecologic cancers, through the lens of the doctors who take care of these women, the women who are our patients, and then sort of the unifying theme of music.
That is just an amazing trajectory. It's kind of like you have this whole alter ego, which it all goes under one cohesive piece, but it's like, let's make a band. Oh, wow, we're going to get, someone wants to make a film about us. It just sounds great. So let's listen to a song, and then we'll come right back.
With denial, there must be some mistake. Check the lab, check the name, double check the date. We bargain a while as the clouds settle on. A week, a month, a year, I can't predict how long.
Great, and that's you singing.
Correct. Yeah.
So tonight, I have so many different questions. Tonight's the film, and obviously the band performs in the film, I would imagine.
It follows the band.
Oh,
so it follows the course of all of the lives of the six doctors. It actually followed, at that point in time, it started when I was in New York City, and it followed me to my move to Alaska. So it incorporates what's going on in Alaska in terms of gynecologic oncology as well.
Oh, wow, that sounds terrific. But let's say somebody just heard that, like myself, and you say, wow, that sounds really good. I know people who are fighting cancer, and I would really like to share it with them. Is there a place where we could buy this CD or any of your CDs or listen to the CD and share your CDs?
Yes, absolutely. On iTunes. Mm-hmm. You can look for both of our albums under No Evidence of Disease and download them.
That sounds great. That sounds great. So obviously this is all about the band and your work. It's all about preventing the disease, curing people. Is there something that you would want to share with people about prevention, about the below-the-belt cancers that you were talking about? Is there something that we should all know?
Well, that's a great question. I think really for gynecologic cancers, the first step is just be willing to talk about it. You know, having women realizing, hey, there are cancers that can affect your vagina, your vulva, your cervix, your uterus, your fallopian tubes, your ovaries. These are all distinct cancers, and they all have distinct signs and symptoms, and there's no need to have any shame about speaking about it. And so part of it is just sort of breaking the silence, and Anchorage, we've coined the term of be down there aware, where we want women to be able to talk about it and learn what those signs and symptoms are. And honestly, it's not just the women, it's the people in our lives. It's our healthcare providers. It's the front line of people who we might present to, or who our patients might present to. Some of these cancers have very obvious signs and symptoms, and some of them don't.
Okay. And Nicole, do you want to add something to that?
Well, I just think it's such a remarkable way to raise awareness, the fact that a documentary crew, you know, followed this band and got into the lives of both the physicians and the patients. The fact that, you know, through the actions of community members like Cheryl, who's sitting behind me, we've been able to bring this movie to Juno and are being able to offer a free showing for people to come and learn and listen and ask questions. We've got Dr. Hope, which is just fantastic that she's here in person. So we're really excited for a good crowd this evening.
Yeah, no, I hope so, because it seems like there are now two gynecological oncologists in Alaska. You know, for years, anyone who had cancer had to go elsewhere. So we have somebody that you can ask questions, whether it's about yourself or just something you read online or someone that you know. I mean, cancer is so pervasive in all of our lives these days. So to have a subject matter expert based here in Alaska who happens to have an alter ego rock star.
And he's going to be here at Juno to answer your questions.
That sounds great. That sounds great. Well, thank you so much for coming in today. And I'm going to check that out. So iTunes, so No Evidence of Disease, or NED, or does it have to be No Evidence of Disease?
N period, E period, D period, or No Evidence of Disease. The first album is self-titled, and the second album is called 6 Degrees.
Okay, and you're working on a third.
And we're working on a third.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you for all you do. Thanks, everybody, for coming in. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 21st of April, 2014. The birthday of novelist Charlotte Bronte, born in Thornton, England, in 1816. A friend at the time described her as a tiny, delicate, serious little lady with fair, straight hair and steady eyes. She was the daughter of an Anglican priest. She grew up in a little village on the moors of West Yorkshire. Mother died when she was young. Father sent her and three of her sisters off to a boarding school which was run by cruel people. The girls were fed burnt porridge, bathed in freezing water. The teachers were harsh. They physically punished them. In fact, two of the Bronte sisters died there at the school, so the father brought Charlotte and her sister Emily back home, where in between their studies, the Bronte girls were free to do whatever they liked. They could roam the moors and read books, and they started to write books. Charlotte found work as a teacher, didn't like teaching, and she wondered if she might be able to make a living with her writing. And so she took her portable wooden writing desk out to a stone on the banks of a stream, and she sat there and she wrote. And 1 year later, she finished her second novel called Jane Eyre, which was published under the name Currer Bell, and which was a huge sensation. It's the birthday of the naturalist John Muir, born Dunbar, Scotland, 1838, moved to this country. He was working at a carriage parts shop in Indianapolis when he almost lost one of his eyes, and the thought that he might never be able to see a flower again affected him so deeply he quit the job and he set out to walk across the country, living as close to nature as possible, walked for 1,000 miles from Indianapolis to the Gulf of Mexico, sailed to Cuba, to Panama, finally arrived in California, which he loved, especially the Sierra Mountains, and spent much of his time hiking, camping there. It was John Muir who was largely responsible for the creation of Yosemite National Park in 1890, and 2 years later he helped found the Sierra Club. It's the birthday of John Clifford Mortimer, London, 1823, a writer who practiced law his entire life and also created the novels featuring the lawyer Rumpole of the Bailey. And it's the birthday of Nell Freudenberger, born New York City, 1975. Spent a year teaching English to teenagers in Thailand, traveled to India, and one day started a story about an American woman in Delhi coping with the death of her married Indian lover. The story was called Lucky Girls. It was published in The New Yorker, and it became a book. Here's a poem for today by W.S. Merwin, entitled The New Song. For some time, I thought there was time, and that there would always be time for what I had a mind to do, and what I could imagine going back to and finding it as I had found it the first time. But by this time, I do not know what I thought when I thought back then. There is no time, yet it grows less. There is the sound of rain at night, arriving unknown in the leaves, once without before or after. Then I hear the thrush waking at daybreak, singing the new song. The new song, a poem by W.S. Merwin, from The Moon Before Morning, published by Copper Canyon Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Welcome back. You're listening to KTOO News Juno, the Juno Afternoon Program. It's 3:32 p.m. We just heard a poem. We talked about a thrush, and spring has sprung in Juno, which means that the Audubon Society is taking their spring cruises up to Berners Bay. And to talk about that, we have Brenda Wright, the president of that organization. Hi, Brenda. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks.
Good. So let's talk about the cruises. It's kind of iconic, the Audubon iconic cruise for spring to go up to Berners Bay.
Yeah, a lot of people might thought, you know, I mean, everybody's excited about spring, of course, because we have long winters. But this is really exciting because we go this early in the year when things aren't green yet, because other things are happening that attract a whole lot of wildlife to the one particular place.
Okay, let's talk. Well, the who, what, where, and when, and why is there is a cruise this Saturday?
Right. April 26th is our first cruise. 8:30 p.m. leaves at Stater Harbor below
the park. P.m. or a.m.?
A.m.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the following Saturday, May 3rd, we have two cruises, 8:30 a.m. and 1:30 a.m. They're 4 hours long each.
And how much are they?
The tickets for adults are $60, students are $30, and children under 12 or 20.
Okay, and where can people buy tickets?
Tickets are available at both har sites.
Okay, and what will people see? Of course, there's no guarantee. There won't be somebody in a whale costume jumping out for your enjoyment, but what typically goes on at Berners Bay this time of year?
Well, this time of year is the reason that we go this time of year is because there's not only are herring spawning, everybody knows about herring, but there's also a very small fish called hooligan or eulacan, but most of us call it hooligan, that come up to spawn in Berners Bay, and they attract thousands and thousands of birds. sea lions and whales.
Wow. Okay. The famous hooligan run. Is there a reason we call them hooligans?
Well, you know, I think it's the way that the natives actually pronounced it. Hulican is the way that the scientists have spelled it. But hooligan, it was also called the candlefish. They're, when they're dried, you can actually light them like a candle. They're so oily.
Mm.
And so they're full of great nutrients, and that's what attracts the birds.
Okay. So we had talked during the break that the cruise has been going on for some 20 years. You've probably been on 30 of the cruises as an interpreter. So can you tell us some wow moments up the bay?
Yeah, you know, 1 year we actually had such an exciting time we didn't quite get around the corner into Berners Bay. But that doesn't happen very often. We just happened to be there when there was a small pod of killer whales, and they were, for whatever reason, they came very near the boat, and then we discovered that they were actually chasing a sea lion that was trying to get shelter from the boat. But the sea lion was unsuccessful, and so it was actually killed right where we could take interesting pictures. By the orcas.
Wow. Wow.
So
the
sea lion.
The sea lion was trying to have safe harbor.
Yes. Well, it was just trying to find protection of any sort, and the boat happened to, we'd slowed down to see the whales, and so it swam towards us. So we got a very, very up close and personal view of all the excitement.
Okay. Orcas working as a team,
yes,
correct?
Yes, working as a team.
Highly intelligent,
yes,
group working as a team.
I know people have been really lucky just recently to see orcas in the channel here downtown. I didn't get to see that, but it is the time of year when they're also attracted to winter kings and the other steelhead that are coming in, so... There's never a guarantee, of course, but the one
thing... You're going to see that? Or if you're put off by that, it's very unlikely that that would happen again.
Yes. So the one thing for sure you'll see is a lot of water and a lot of birds.
What about the mountains?
Mountains, too. You know, we can't always qualify that, you know, sometimes, 50% of the time, yes.
That's true. You might not be able to see the mountains. And also the sea lions hauling off, that's almost
yes.
a sure thing.
We always stop at Benjamin Island so that we can see them. And there's always a few there, even if they're attracted somewhere else by good food.
Okay. So that's the cruises, which are, of course, fundraisers for the Society. Tell us what the Society, Audubon Society, does here in Juneau.
Well, we always invite people to come with us during the spring migration period. We offer free public hikes every Saturday. And they've already started, and the schedule you can find on the webpage. But our next one is Berners Bay, so we won't actually have a walk in town. But this is the time when all the spring migrant birds come through. So every Saturday from the beginning of May through the middle of June, we'll have a Saturday walk. And then in the middle of summer, we have Saturday Wild walks, where we might go above the tram to look for ptarmigan and grouse or other birds that live in the alpine. We might look for berries. We go on a low tide walk. So just keep up with us. We'll let you know when we're going to do these hikes.
And how do people keep up with you?
Mostly on the webpage. We do talk. We put ourselves on the calendar so that you can see it that way. And we put up posters whenever we're having a walk. Saturday Wild Walk.
Sounds great. Okay, so thank you for joining us. The Juneau Audubon Society, the cruises is this Saturday and next Saturday, and tickets, there's still some left?
Still available at Hearthside.
Okay, great. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks so much for letting us talk on the radio.
This is Bird Note. Aldo Leopold, in his groundbreaking work, A Sand County Almanac, described his family's efforts to restore their land to its natural state. Leopold's granddaughter, Susan Freeman, a piano teacher in Seattle, inherited that land ethic. When offered the chance to help restore a watershed on Western Washington's Olympic Peninsula, Susan and her husband Scott couldn't wait to dig in. Together with fellow landowner Peter Bales, the Freemans are restoring the 5-mile-long Tarboo Creek. They've planted more than 5,000 trees so far. What inspires someone to put so much time and energy into a piece of land? Let's hear from Susan.
Planting the tree to me represents being able to do something for future generations the way my grandfather and my father have done for my generation and my kids. And that means so much to me to see what they've done and how much better the land is that my grandfather had bought originally as a sand hill farm, where everything was devastated by the overproduction of corn. And now it's this lovely pine forest. And also, the most special thing is to have our kids be able to do it with us. And so they're part of that process, and maybe they'll want to pass that on and do that with their children.
Earth Day is tomorrow. What could you do to help the natural world? You needn't go far. There's probably a project near you. Learn more at birdnote.org.
A new meeting place in Juneau. At 360 is a unique high-tech studio space for the community. For civic events, arts, cultural and music performances, town hall meetings, training classes, conferences, screenings, and more. If you are organizing an event for 20 to 80 and looking for a venue which is flexible and inviting, call us at 586-1670 or visit our website, ktoo.org/360space. At 360, convene, converse, create. Juneau's multimedia space.
Okay, speaking of that multimedia space, John Deere, this Friday, 7 p.m. at that KTO studio, is going to be talking. He is an internationally known voice for peace and nonviolence, and his speech is Peacemaking, Civil Disobedience, and Truth-Telling in a World of Permanent War. He was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize by Archbishop Desmond Tutu. And then on Saturday, there's a workshop at Northern Lights, and that's from 9 to 4. This is sponsored by Juneau People for Peace and Justice. For more information, I would search for them on the web, Juneau People for Peace and Justice. So here in the studio, our next guest is Corey Stinnett. She is the outreach educator for Planned Parenthood of the Northwest here in Juneau, and she's here to talk about upcoming workshops. So Corey, what's on the docket?
Yeah, thanks. Well, in May, we have some upcoming workshops that have been pretty popular in the community. We have our Growing Up All About Puberty workshops, and these are for parents and sons that are between the ages of 9 and 12, and then parents and also their daughters that are between the ages of 9 and 12. And it's really a time to support conversations starting between parents and their kids before puberty really kicks in, and we get to do some fun activities and talk about family values and expectations and really just provide some accurate information about some of the emotional and physical changes that are going to be happening to these kids during puberty.
Okay, so this is not a new class. You've been offering this for how long now?
Yeah, we've offered this class over the past year and a half, and so quite a few families have been through it at this point. Last fall, we had about 18 families who participate in it, and we've gotten really good feedback from families. So we're, you know, going to continue to offer it probably in the spring and fall of every year.
Okay, so, yeah. And how many people are usually at each workshop?
You know, we have 10 is kind of our limit, 10 families, which ends up being, you know, 20 people plus, or depending if multiple parents come or if there's multiple siblings in that age range. So it, you know, is anywhere from right around 15 to 20 people.
Okay. And so the Growing Up Male workshop for parents and sons, when is that?
That is going to be on Monday, May 12th. And that's from 5:45 to 8:15 p.m., and it will be at the Juneau Family Health and Birth Center in the upstairs classroom.
And is there a fee?
There is. We ask a suggested donation of $20 per family, and that helps. We also provide a light dinner for the families that are there, and then just helps some of our costs, because parents do get some materials. They get a Growing Up Puberty booklet to kind of help us all remember what our kids are going through at those ages, and a lot of resources.
Okay. So, yeah. And then the Growing Up Female workshop, when is that?
That's going to be the following Monday, May 19th, from 5:45 to 8:15 p.m. as well, also at the Juneau Family Health and Birth Center. Okay. In that upstairs classroom.
And people, do they have to register?
They do. It is really, we really do need people to pre-register, especially because we have a limited amount of space. And I should say the Growing Up Female Workshop actually has 10 families already registered. I wanted to go ahead and let people know because we are accepting folks on the waiting list. And if that waiting list becomes, you know, enough people for another class to hold, then we'll be getting with people to find out when would be a good date for that.
Okay. So if you happen to be the female parent of a son or mm-hmm. the male parent of a daughter, you're still welcome at these?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're not going to specify on that. There's so many different families and family needs, and we've had dads at the daughter workshops and moms at the son workshops, and anyone is welcome. And, you know, whether it's a parent, a caregiver, grandparent, whoever wants to come with their child that's in that age range is absolutely welcome.
And that age range, once again, was?
9 to 12 years old.
Okay. All right. And for more information, is there a number or is there a contact?
There is. You can reach me at 209-7051, and that's 209-7051. Okay. And then I can get more information.
All right. And then was there supposed to be something going on tonight?
There was. You know, in addition to the parent-child workshops, we also do workshops just for parents. It typically tends to be parents of teens or youth who are kind of going through puberty. And it's a time for parents to come together, talk with other parents, really identify some of their values. We talk about communication skills, boundaries, and health so that they can be prepared to start the conversation and keep it going with their kids. So we have that scheduled for tonight from 6 to 8:30 at the Birth Center, and we are going to have to reschedule that. So I really encourage folks, if they're interested in attending one of those, to please contact me and let me know. We're going to try to reschedule that before the end of the school year. And sorry, I don't have the date right now.
Okay. And once again, 209-7051 is the best way to get a hold of you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
All right. Well, thank you, Corey, for coming in today.
You're very welcome.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Not time to make a change. Just relax, take it easy. You're still young, that's your fault. There's so much you have to know. Find a girl, settle down. If you want, you can marry. Look at me, I am old, but I'm happy. I was once like you are now, and I know that it's not easy to be calm when you found something going on. But take your time, think a lot. Why, think of everything you've got, for you will still be here tomorrow, but your dreams may not. Can I try to explain? When I do, he turns away again. It's always been the same, same old story. From the moment I could talk, I was ordered to listen. Now there's a way, and I know that I have to go away. I know I have to go.
Okay, we're back. It's Juno Afternoon. I'm Joan Pardis, your Monday host. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. It's 3:48 p.m. and it's clouding up a little outside. But in here, we're nice and toasty. We have our last guest of the day. We have Christine Morbury, who's the Mabry, who is the owner of Mountainside Wellness, and Renee Gayhart, who works out at Mountainside Wellness. Hello, ladies. How are you?
Hey, Joan. Thanks for having us today.
Yeah, so let's talk. You want to talk about summer fitness. So what are your recommendations?
So you may have noticed that we're getting a lot more light outside and even early in the morning. And so this time of year, it just feels natural to want to get outside and be active and enjoy our gorgeous environment that we have here. And I just want to encourage people to do that for sure, but to also, you know, think about what you're doing and maybe how you can complement your outdoor activities with some core strength and stretching to make sure that you can do what you want to do for the long haul.
Okay, and what would you recommend? So when you say that, what does that mean?
So I think everybody has the experience where they go out for the first bike ride or the first hike of the season or something, and that night or that the next morning you wake up and you're so sore you can't move, right? So we need to do some stretching. And people think it has to be some long, elaborate yoga routine or something, but really your body has a lot of intelligence. And so if you just listen and feel, you know, what muscles are feeling tight, then you'll know what to stretch. And if you still need some help, then you can come in and take some classes and we'll give you a few pointers.
Okay. So let me ask you a question. The stretching, is it true before and after, only before,
That's
after?
A great question, Joan. So usually before exercise is just to make your exercise more comfortable, and it's really not to increase flexibility. The stretching after your workout is where you actually will get some long-term gains in flexibility.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about your business, Mountainside Wellness.
Yeah.
And you have a space up at the
Arcticore? I do. I have a space in the Arcticore building, and I have lots of really wonderful clients who somehow, and with all the other commitments they have in their life, make time for their workouts, you know, multiple times a week. And so it's really neat to have a space where we can come together and just have fun as we work out and create a sense of community there. It's
okay.
A really neat building with a lot of really great healthcare providers in that building. So it's fun to be a part of that community as well.
So do you have private classes? Do you have group classes?
So right now we're doing a combination of drop-in classes, anyone is welcome to come into, and some small group personal training. And then also I still do privates for some people who like and prefer that option.
Okay. And what kind of classes are they? Because I know that you kind of have a niche here as far as what you do that might be a little bit different than what you're a small place, number one, but
yeah,
different than...
Yeah,
so let's talk about that.
Small studio is kind of nice because you get a lot of one-on-one attention, and small group is great because you get that camaraderie and that accountability piece that seems to be so important for people to adhere to a program, which is what my friend Renee here is doing. And so in the small group programs, we have Tabata Boot Camp, which is just a fantastic 8-week focused program. Mm-hmm. So for people who are looking for something that not only combines state-of-the-art research in the workout part of it, but also great nutrition information and that accountability piece, that's been a really, really popular program for me.
And you have one starting up soon, or are you in the middle of one?
Yeah, the next one will start up in June, and we're going to go outside. We're going to have some outside boot camp classes. It'll be really fun.
Cool. All right. So, Renee, you work out with Kristen.
Yes, I've been working out with Kristen ever since she opened about a year ago.
Okay. How do you fit it in? What's the secret?
You know, the secret is, you know, fit it into your lunch hour or go right after work, right before you got to pick up the kids and get to all their activities. And Kristen has quite a busy schedule. There's morning classes at 6 a.m. There's noon classes. And then there's evening classes at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and 7. So there's a wide array to choose from.
And is there one thing that you really like? Because I'm sure she offers a wide variety of classes.
Yeah, the reason I actually started was for the boot camp class, and that's an 8-week class. And it really focuses on full body and wellness. You really do kind of bond with the group you're with, and you keep each other accountable. You text each other during the day and make sure they're going to show up. And it's really quick. You can fit it in 50 minutes, and you're there, you get it done, and it's high energy, and then you go home and do the rest of your evening activities.
Okay.
And hopefully maybe even get inspired to go for a long hike over the weekend or get outside and enjoy this beautiful place that we live in, which I know Renee, she's one of my strongest people. She's really pushing me to always come up with new ideas about how to challenge. So always glad to have Renee around.
Great. So if people are, if their interest is it's peaked and they say, what is this Mountainside Wellness? Where can they find out information?
MountainsideWellness.com. You're welcome to check us out there. Everything's online. Or just drop in and chat anytime.
Okay. All right. And any other, like we were talking a little bit about nutrition, any kind of new spring nutritional tips you want to share?
Oh, my goodness. There's all kinds of age-old advice to eat with the season. So if something's coming into season, that's what you should eat. So as we, you know, come on to late spring and summer, just any vegetables you can get your hands on that are grown fresh here locally or organically that are available, just eat as many vegetables as you can.
Okay. And then what about the spring, fall cleanses? A lot of people are talking about cleanses.
They certainly are, and that's one of the things we're really excited to be offering now. Dr. Emily Kane, who is one of my favorite people in town, is giving detox workshops in my space the second Friday of the month at noon. So you can come in and learn all about how to cleanse safely and naturally with natural agents. Learn all about that and feel like $1 million.
Okay, sounds great. Well, thank you both for coming in. Now you're probably going to go work out.
It's almost that time.
All right, thanks. Come on by anytime to talk about what's going on and to share your tips. It'd be great.
Thanks so much.
All right, thank you. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Okay, then. So I'd like to talk a little bit about another thing that's happening this weekend. Saturday, April 26th, John Straley is here. He's doing a 49 Writers Writing Workshop, How to Organize Your Life to Write That Book You've Always Talked About. That's going to be 1 to 4 at the Jack. And to find out more, you could go to 49writingcenter.org. As for the weather, tonight mostly cloudy in the evening, then becoming partly cloudy. Tomorrow, partly cloudy. Tomorrow night, increasing clouds, scattered rain showers. Wednesday, decreasing clouds, scattered rain showers. Wednesday night, partly cloudy, and then partly cloudy right through the weekend with maybe a little bit of rain. So tomorrow, Scott Burden is hosting Juno Afternoon, and you'll get a preview of next week's concert by Bella Fleck and Chick Corea. Updates about Bike to Work Month, which is also next month in May. You'll learn about Discovery Southeast Outdoors Explorers Summer Day Camp, and also someone will be here to highlight the school district's integrated preschool program. Now, you know, if you miss a program on KTOO, you could always listen at ktoo.org. It's 3:56 p.m. It's April 21st. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Partis. Thank you for listening to Juno Afternoon.
Attention, Alaskan writers. 360 North's new series, Writer Showcase, is looking for short fiction and creative nonfiction for our June 5th episode. The show's summer-inspired theme is endurance, and we want pieces that are set in summer or somehow reflect the theme of endurance and are 5 to 12 minutes long when read aloud. Please visit 360north.org for more information or send your submission by May 2nd to arts@ktoo.org.
Attention tour operators, lodging owners, and anyone serving tourists and visitors to Juneau. The 2014 Accessible Tourism Training Series is finally here. The series kicks off April 22nd and runs through May 10th. You can participate in one or all of the classes. Learn how to best serve visitors to Juneau who have a disability. For more information and to register, visit AlaskaAccessibleTravel.com or call 321-3154. This training series is sponsored by Southeast Alaska Independent Living.